Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs.
Hi everyone, thanks for joining us today for the final episode of Season 6 of Tate Talks. Today we're joined by Teresia Joseph of Tavanka, and we learnt all about her experience getting into the MSP community. Hope you enjoy. Hi everyone, welcome back to Tate Talks, where today I've got a guest that I spoke to on a Jump Cloud partner success interview series, Teresia Joseph from Tavanka. And I found the, if you've not listened to it, I'd recommend, I'll put the link below, but it was so fascinating for me that we kind of thought we need to get Teresia back onto the Tate Talks podcast as well. So really looking forward to digging in and find a little bit more about your background. But before we get going, welcome, Teresia, firstly. But could you maybe sort of tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure, Chris. Thank you for inviting me again. Like, that last experience was amazing, talking with you and just sharing a little bit about our experience with Jump Cloud. So yeah, I was excited to come back. As you said, I'm the owner of Tavanka. We're an MSP in Vancouver and the Lower Mainland, and we pretty much focus like other MSPs on helping businesses to maintain the infrastructure, keep everything updated, and but you also ask about myself. I'm German. I grew up in like a small town close to Berlin, and I came to Vancouver about 5-6 years ago, met my business partner Rushab, who is the most amazing person I've ever met. That's why we actually like built the business together. And he's amazing in customer support and kind of kept me in Vancouver. I was just about to stay 1 year. Then I met him and my life partner as well, and kind of thought about staying here, building the business.
Yeah, it's amazing, because I did know that you were German. We mentioned that on the previous call, but I kind of assumed you'd been in Canada a lot longer than that. So obviously you speak perfect English. We're talking about that previously. So you speak fantastic English to say that you were kind of in Berlin until sort of 5 to 6 years ago.
Yes. So it's kind of close to Berlin. I also lived in Frankfurt, and it was all over the place in between. So when we're in school, we do learn English, and like 10 years ago, I think my English wasn't as good. And then I thought, like, okay, I'm like in the middle of studying, what's a better time than now, going to Australia, just jumping right in. And the only thing that I can remember was I knew how to order food. That's how I survived. And then from there, I just developed and developed. I'm still feeling like there's a lot of topics that I don't talk as often about, where I have to develop more skills, but I much appreciate that you say English is good.
No, it's genuine. And I know you say near Berlin. I've been to Berlin a few times, actually. It's a super cool city. I really like Berlin. It's very nice. However, I've never been to Vancouver, and that's kind of, I keep mentioning that, hinting that every time I do speak to someone from there, in case someone's going to invite me sometime, because I've heard it's supposed to be absolutely spectacular. And I've been to other parts of Canada, but on the East Coast, so Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, those sort of places. But I'm continually being told that Vancouver's the place to be, so I'll hopefully get there at some point.
Definitely. You should for sure come, especially in the summer, winter, depending if you're a winter or summer person. I wouldn't recommend as much because it's freezing and can't do, well, you can, but you'll be cold. But the outdoor things, going to the mountains, like Whistler, doing like the bike rides, mountain bike rides, and like other things, they're just more amazing, more comfortable when it's warm. So summer is coming.
Absolutely. So quick, I guess, before we get into the questions, just one random one I've just thought of is, what, if anything, do you miss from Germany? Is there some sort of food that you can't get there? Or is it the culture, the weather, or what is it? Do you miss anything from Germany?
I do miss my family a lot. I came here just for work and holiday, and thought, as I said before, I'm just going to stay 1 year, improve my English, go back, and work in a company where they might need English skills. But yeah, now like going home is a 15 hours flight with a train ride for 2 hours. And sometimes difficult because all my family is still in the same small town. Couple of family members, like my brother, they're like 2 hours away. Like he lives close to Berlin. But yeah, for me, it's longer, especially like their family events, grandparents getting older, like those type of things are like a little bit more harsh. But yeah, the food is still like, it's the second favorite thing what I would miss.
Yeah, so I imagine you, yeah, I mean, the German food's sort of fantastic. So I don't know whether that's sort of available in Vancouver or not, but I'm sure it's nice to go back to have it.
I was lucky enough that my parents and grandparents taught me how to cook, and I can do a lot of things myself, especially like I like baking when I'm like not working. So I do some breads, cakes. I love to make ice cream, like everything around. So I like try to do different things. And there's always like this German flavor in it.
Yeah, and as there should be. So let's go back a little then to you before you sort of got to Canada and before Tevanka began and everything. You mentioned you went to Australia, but I mean, what were you doing sort of career-wise before that? And even when you got to Canada, how did you end up in the MSP space?
That's a it's a great question, and it's also like a little bit tricky one to answer. When I left school, I actually started in medicine. And because I was in between, I wasn't like, I wanted to help people and I loved IT, but then like helping was, there was a bigger urge in it. And it was, IT by then wasn't as really available. There weren't any jobs around my area. So medicine was definitely easier to get in. So I started at a doctor's office and I had to do like multiple, procedures like in a heart monitor, like a stress test, and like all those things where you do need technology. And most of the times when I've learned doing this, some of the devices started failing. I got quickly bothered by it because in the end that meant like patients had to wait. Some of them like came in, waited 2 hours, we couldn't make it work. And then they had to go back home and come in another day. Sometimes it's a month apart. And some of those patients, they really needed the tests. So I started even coming in earlier in the mornings and just making sure like all the devices that I've worked on, like in my lung tests and things, like everything was working. Tested it, made sure the patients got in, got out on time. And then slowly my team noticed that I'm doing this for myself. And then they asked if I can also like look after the other devices. And I like kind of spiraled down where I think after a half year, I was starting to take over like the whole infrastructure, like taking over. It sounds so big, but it was like looking after the workstations in general, that all the updates were running. And then a while later, actually, that was funny. Another like practice called us. They couldn't send us their test results and they were just struggling and wanted to send them a different way. And then naturally, I just helped them on the phone to fix their issue. And that was like kind of the tipping point where I'm like, maybe medicine isn't that for me, because also it's like mentally really, really stressing. We had a lot of young patients coming in, and like I remember one girl, she was like my age, and I created this like deep relationship, and I've learned you shouldn't do this, but I was young. I was super young, and I just, it was natural for me. We had most things in common, same age. And then I'm getting goosebumps right now. She died like after 1.5 years knowing her. She died, her dad came in and was like, you can close her file. And that like hit me so bad that I focused more on the IT side and didn't try to like develop those relationships. And then when the other practice called and was like, oh, okay, we have this issue, I was able to help. then I noticed maybe there's another way that doesn't mentally, emotionally hurt me as bad, but still where it can help people. And yeah, I went to study business technologies. Then while I was studying, I've noticed, okay, like IT medicine, it's a lot about English. Like you really have to know how to communicate in English to understand instructions, to move forward. And then I've decided to go to Australia. As I said at the beginning, I could just order food and was like, oh my God, can I really do this? But I stayed there like a year, came back again, traveled a little bit in Asia and New Zealand, just practice, and went back to Germany, finished my studies. And after then I was like, okay, now I work in IT, but I'm not quite there yet. So maybe I should go to Canada just for a work and holiday, specifically in the technology field, and then come back and see what I'm going to do. And then, yeah, kind of landed here, got the job in IT at another MSP, met my business partner, and from there, everything just got it rolling and, yeah, got me down the road to Tevenka.
Amazing. And yeah, sorry for your loss. That seems a sad story. And I guess that is like one of the pitfalls, I suppose, of being involved in medicine. It's going to happen. But when you said, you know, father comes in, says, close the file, I guess that sort of hits home that there's a human at the end of it rather than just a device or a computer, which we work with. But obviously, you mentioned there that you kind of took to this naturally, wanting to fix the problems with the equipment and get things operational. So would you say you're a technical person? Did you have a technical education or you, obviously you seem to take to it quite naturally?
Yes, I think I was also lucky enough that all my family is kind of like, okay, my parents maybe not as much, but my brother works in IT. My cousin works in IT. He actually has a MSP business in Germany. And we're all like, or I was always surrounded by technical devices. And I think I drove my parents nuts when, like, I remember being like super young, pulling apart the video recorder and like other devices. And then my parents just like, oh my God, what did you do? I'm like, no, I can fix it. Couldn't always fix it, often got in trouble, but just the urge and like knowing how things work helped me, like even helps me now just to troubleshoot and like, okay, taking things apart, putting it back together. So yeah, always like a little bit skills there.
No, absolutely. It seems like it from a very early age. And I was intrigued when you mentioned that obviously your brother's got an MSP in Germany. I mean, do you speak to him about differences or similarities between the market in Canada and Germany?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. It's my cousin who has the MSP.
Okay, cool.
But my brother works in IT. And yes, we sometimes talk about, and it's definitely, there are so many common things like IT security guidelines. Germany is really strict on things. Whereas Canada is as well, there are some common things, some completely different how we approach things. So yeah.
So I'm just thinking with my sort of vendor hat on, sort of previous life and where we're with, and you mentioned it earlier about the English thing, a lot of the vendors are generally based in the US, a lot of them. They go, when they're moving into Europe, they go to the UK because of the English language, but then Germany is a huge market, so they try and go into Germany, but sometimes they fail because the localization of the product isn't there for the, so a lot of it is in English, which obviously Germans speak very good English, but it's it can sometimes be a barrier. But then you've also mentioned the other rules that Germany have got on kind of data sovereignty and different things around data protection, which kind of makes it a little bit more difficult for foreign vendors as well.
Yeah. And definitely like the language barriers there, I can see it. Like there's a lot of information in German as well, right? There are a lot of vendors and like some of the like bigger vendors, they like even have their locations in Germany. They have German speakers. But then I feel like sometimes the main source is English. And you do have to translate it. And like the news sometimes like coming out first in, like in English. And I think that's why I chose to go to Australia, because I don't want to be running behind. I want to be up in front. I want to be proactive. I want to know things first when things are happening, so I can make the best recommendations. Where I do believe my cousin has the same benefits, it's just like a little bit different approach in German. So everyone has chosen their path.
Yeah, and it's a strange, not strange, but I mean, Germany is a huge market for IT. It's probably the largest, well, it is the largest economy in Europe, but it just seems that the majority of traditional MSP-focused vendors, I'd call them, probably go from the US to the UK first, and then probably into the Nordics because of the English, and then into German because of the English. But some of the territories like France, for example, they struggle to get into those generally again because of the language barrier, which is a challenge that MSP vendors probably need to improve on to try, because there's a huge addressable market that they're just not really tapping into.
That's true, but also like there are so many countries that are speaking English, right? And it's just so easy for big companies that want to like go into other markets to just like pick on those ones first. Even if you have someone in the US, like UK, Australia, so many opportunities. So why not picking up the ones first where the language is already there, where you don't have to translate things like documents. You don't need to like teach someone in English and then translating it into German. Like it's just a lot of time involvement. So yeah, I can see why they're going first to the UK.
Yeah, well, it happens a lot, but maybe that's going to change. Right, on to the next question then, which I normally ask this because a lot of the guests on here work in vendors, as we were just discussing, rather than MSPs themselves. So I'm curious for your thoughts on this. I mean, we're into March 2024 recording this now. So, I mean, what are you seeing the big challenges facing MSPs like Tivanka in, as we move forward?
I think like the big thing that is coming and is already here is AI, because there are so many opportunities. It makes our life so much easier. We have seen it with technology that isn't really AI, but makes our life easier. Let's just look at our phones and like Google Maps. I've just noticed, like I went to Toronto to for another training and I was lost, because everything was underground and Google Maps was just like, it's the street where it's guiding you, right? And then if you go underground, you can still look at your Google Maps, but it doesn't show the stores or other things or the streets. So I was literally lost, and I like noticed how much I rely on Google Maps to go from A to B. And then if like users, people, like everyone has those habits to just rely on technology, maybe on AI, handing over the thinking, especially then within a business, it can become really, really dangerous. I see loads of benefits. I see loads of time improvements and just efficiency, like saving costs and so much more time for everyone. But then also there is like this downside on this, like AI really do what we want it to do, or does it like just spiral at some point, just do its own thing without control? So yeah, I think just implementing those things, businesses, we see it now, like some of our clients, they implement AI and then we see like, oh, maybe it's not as secure as it should be. So it's just a huge challenge that we're all facing.
Yeah, and that kind of leads on then to about AI, because we're kind of being told it's in the news every time we open an MSP article. It's about AI, AI this, AI that. And as vendors, we're talking to MSPs about AI. But you're speaking to your clients who are presumably kind of small to medium sized businesses in the sort of, you know, greater Vancouver area. I mean, are they coming to you saying, we've heard about AI, what can it help us with? Or are you going to them and saying, you could do this to help your business? So how do those conversations go?
It's actually going both ways. I'll don't want to recommend anything that I haven't tried out myself. Often, like especially designers, they like to try out new things, new technology. Me personally, I'm not trying this out because there is no like personal need for it, right? Or my business doesn't have a need to like try out those kinder technology. So they're coming being like, hey, we have set this up already. It's already in here, but there's like one part missing and we can't make it working. So sometimes we do have to say like, okay, hold on, let's see what this software or like whatever you've just implanted actually is. What are the upsides? What are the downsides? Especially the downsides. Is there anything like, you know, sometimes, and that's not just with AI, but you like the instruction or like the agreements like can be Google or whatever. And it says, we have access to all of your data. And users, they don't read it. They just want to test the solution. And like just, so we run into this where we're like, okay, but this third party vendor has now access to everything from this data on. Did you want this? Oh, no, we didn't. Like, that's definitely challenges.
No, fascinating. So you're kind of saying that AI is another kind of sort of shadow IT then, that people are just deploying and accepting licenses and but doing it outside of the control of their MSP or their employer.
I love actually that you use the term shadow IT. I haven't heard this in English like a lot, but we use it in German quite a lot. And that's definitely the case. They're just building solutions around. It's easy to implement. It's just like almost plug and play. And yeah, that's definitely a struggle.
That's a very interesting thought actually for MSPs, because you say people sign, click on these sort of end user license agreements without reading them. So they don't know what's happening to the data, but they're willingly firing it all into the AI to make their lives easier. But, you know, what's happening to that data?
Yeah, exactly. And like sometimes I wouldn't say like everyone isn't reading it, but I have definitely been in situations before where I'm like, oh, I know this application. Let's just say, okay, are you in a rush or other things like WhatsApp, right? There were changes on the license agreements and everything. So like the user manual. So
yeah. And it's, I mean, it's not your client, it's not you, it's not me. I don't think they're made to be written, to be read, sorry, because they're so complicated. They're written in legal text, so it's difficult to decipher them. Even unless you're a kind of a lawyer, you're not going to be able to know what you're looking for anyway.
Exactly, I agree. And they're way too long. They're, as well as you said, like they're difficult written. They're all the same font. There's nothing in bold. Like I do like personally like contracts that are just highlighting the most important things. What do I have to watch out for? Like how long is my agreement, or like other things, what do I have to give in order to get the service? But those, you're right, they're just hard to read.
Yeah, well, talking about reading, that takes us on to the next question. I mean you mentioned baking earlier. This may be the answer, I don't know, but what I like to ask is what people like to do to relax. I mean, do you read books, watch movies, podcasts, or are you mainly baking or mountain biking that we spoke about earlier, or getting into the mountains? What do you do to relax?
It really depends on the weather. Like in the winter, I do like to read a little bit more than in the summer. In the summer, I'm like often on hikes or like on the water. I love paddleboarding. And yeah, just recently I got a little puppy, golden retriever. Like he takes pretty much all of my free time. He's 6 months now, and like just training him is such a journey. Like I did not, like I expected like definitely a change in my lifestyle, but it has brought so much joy, so much like personal development, so much more patience that I have to have. Like I always thought I'm a patient person, but he shows me, no, you have to calm down before I'm going to learn things. And yeah, just, I'm really involved at the moment, just going to puppy school and like training him other tricks, like pushing buttons and like you know those talking buttons when they press a word and then they get it. And I think that's taking most of my time right now.
Oh, well, a previous guest, Ben Spector from Zomentum, we had a chat and he mentioned he'd recently got a dog. I think that was sometime last year. And it was amazed how much it changed him. I guess from a work perspective as well, it kind of meant he had to get out of the house and go for a walk, or rather than sitting at his desk all day. And it changed his life for the better in terms of sort of physical fitness and getting out there because you've got no alternatives. So I'm sure there are huge mental health benefits, if nothing else, and physical health benefits for having a dog.
Definitely. Like before I love my job. I love just sitting there working. I do love my weekends as well and evenings, but sometimes I just get sucked in into problem solving, right? Or other things that we want to try, test out, see if it breaks and if you can fix it. But yeah, if there's a little doggy looking at you and just like asking to go out, you go out. And now the days are, we just had the time change last week. Days are getting longer. So yesterday I actually stayed in the dog park for 2 hours, just watching him play. Like this is a huge, like huge, huge time improvement on my side on like, yeah, just getting more patient, quiet with myself. So
Well, talking of the time change, as I'm sure you're aware, because it's probably affected you the same way as it affects me, is all of my meetings have been out of sync this week because I'm in the UK. Most of my team that I work with are in the US, and the US and Canada have changed their clocks, but Europe haven't changed ours yet for another 2 weeks. So we've got an hour shorter distance between us, but it's messed my calendar up completely. So, and I'm sure you probably have the same when speaking to your family.
Actually, it's getting a little bit easier at the moment. But that's because it's personal, like conversations, right? So I can have them like early in the day or things. Whereas I think for you, everyone is working and then you only have those 8 hours or 9 hours, depending on like how long your team is working. And now you have an hour that just vanished.
True. Yeah. Well, I mean, from my point of view, the sooner, and I know we keep saying it's coming, but the sooner they kind of move away from this sort of changing the clocks, the better, and sort of standardize on daylight, summertime. That would be ideal. But whether that's ever going, it's continually being spoken about, but no one seems it doesn't seem to be getting any further forward.
I just wanted to ask you if you think that will ever come.
Well, I know in Europe, I think the European Union have kind of said they're going to do it, but they've not voted on it yet. The UK, obviously not being in the European Union, I think would have to follow suit. In the US, I think some states do it and some don't, which I find super confusing. So I don't know how that even works. So, I mean, I don't see the benefit of it anymore either.
To be honest, like I've heard those conversations so often that I'm at a point where like, okay, either do it or don't. Just it's I don't want to talk like every half year about if we should remove it or not.
So maybe that wasn't the best question to ask then, but but you're right. We do speak about it twice a year. It is
Yeah, exactly.
one of those things. Yeah, we must waste so much time doing it. Let's just make a decision and stick to it.
Exactly. And globally, if we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's not going to happen as we know, but we'll see. Right. Okay. Moving on to the next question. You've obviously started a very successful MSP in quite a short time period. If you were speaking to someone now at an event or you met them sort of on the road somewhere and they were looking to say, well, we're thinking of starting an MSP, what advice would you give them in terms of maybe something that you've learned along the way or something that you did that worked really well? But what advice would you offer a new MSP?
I would definitely say know what you're talking about, like know your solutions. That's really important. I see it with our clients, like jumping back and forth is not good for the client. It's like what I don't, let me start different. I don't want to recommend a solution that is not sustainable. And then just confuse the client with recommending another one, or maybe another one, just trying, testing out what's working. Like I want to set something that long term works, where we don't have to spend time and time again. And then the other part that is really important to really know your solutions and what you're choosing is to talk with people. Go out, go to like those, to this conferences or whatever, where MSPs are meeting. It was been really beneficial to us to like talk to vendors, go to all of those events, and see what problems they're encountering and how they navigate through it. I'm also, yes, we have competitors, but everyone has competitors. I don't mind. I love to work with other MSPs because we all have the same struggle. We all have our customers for whatever reason they chose us. I'm not like my main purpose is not going after clients from other MSPs. I do want to grow my company, but I'm not like targeting someone else. So I'd rather work with another MSP, help their business, they help us. It's more like a hand in hand. Like IT, as we said it before, is evolving so much that being an MSP, sometimes a solopreneur, could be lonely. So just talking with the peers is really beneficial. And like building this network was really important for us. So whoever is starting, I would highly recommend to reach out to the MSPs in the area, or even like globally. We've talked with quite a lot from the US. I've obviously from Germany. My cousin also has other connections. So I'm always trying to see where we're at, what problems are there, where can I learn from.
Fantastic. And community is something that we continually talk about on this podcast. And you're absolutely right. When I was working in an MSP and working with MSPs at different events, there is competition, but I think there's also, it's a very unique industry that there's so much sharing information. People, MSPs will speak to other MSPs in the same city or the same location and be open. And I think it's great. I think it just helps raise everyone's sort of performance as well, which is fantastic.
Exactly. And I mean, we all want to grow one way or the other, right? Personally, within the business. And why not growing together?
Absolutely. And one thing that I know that you're passionate about from reading your book, which was amazing, and speaking to you previously, we mentioned about shadow IT before, which I guess feeds into this, is around the user training. I mean, is that something that I know that you probably, I think Tivanka probably do more than a lot of MSPs, but you see value in ensuring that users are educated on the solutions?
Oh God, yes, it's so important because whatever we're gonna set, right? Whatever solution is set up there, email, let's just say like an email solution. We set all the filters in the back end. We're trying to do our best to protect as many things as we can. If we have a user just coming to their busy workday, clicking a couple links and just typing in their password without thinking about things, then this could be crucial. Like, it doesn't matter if it's the business owner or the reception or someone else, as soon as like there is a door open for an attacker to get data, they either get more or they might get financial value right away out of it. So training the users is really important. We usually do at least once a year. We recommend cybersecurity training twice a year, actually, to our clients. We also do training, like just in a communal area where we do free trainings for anyone who wants to join. It's just really important, like, because as well, what I'm always saying during the training, we're not just learning for the business, we're learning for ourselves. Like, it's the bank accounts, the email, like personal email accounts, all those personal social media accounts. If we're not having like a clean work hygiene and just like doing the things that we're supposed to and like staying away from the things that could be too potential dangerous, then we're putting our like cyber social life and cyber business life just at a risk. And we don't want to do that.
No, and it's spot on. I think that the point you made about personal life is really important. We've spoken about that previously, and that things like password managers or multi-factor authentication on your applications you use for work, and understanding why you use unique passwords for every application is just as applicable for your like your home social media and banking accounts and things. But people will often still share the same passwords across them. And I don't know the stats, but I think the last time I looked, applications like Facebook have probably got a tiny amount of users, percentage-wise, that have got sort of even basic 2FA enabled on them, which is crazy when you think of the amount of data that's in there and the amount of damage it could do if someone sort of hacked into the account.
Yeah, exactly. True point, as well as a lot of things that are getting hacked here is usually the Instagram accounts. And Instagram, like, has this mechanism. If you're not showing your face, if you just have like a business, let's say you're making cakes and you're always just putting cakes on like every day, whatever you've made. If your face isn't showing up on Instagram and you cannot verify that this account isn't yours or is yours, it will be locked. You have no chance to open this account again. So if someone hacks in, takes over your identity, Instagram just locks the account and no one has access anymore. It happened to a friend of mine, and he built his like Instagram profile over 5 years, continuously working on it, right? And like just doing the most that he can, and then it got locked down, and it just like it's his business, and it's just like such a shame. Like, it kind of hurts even saying that.
That's amazing. I think my Instagram, although I don't use it often, is pretty much exclusively pictures of beer. Glasses of beer. So maybe I need to go and put a picture of myself on there somewhere just in case it happens.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's I'm not sure. I haven't looked into if that's like on the Instagram rules, but for any business owner, I would always recommend just like portray yourself in it, right? Just make a story or whatever it is about you, and then at least you can show that this is your account. It's such a shame if you leave. Like, just imagine you like losing the last 100 beers that you were holding, and you're just like trying to break a record with it. Just yeah.
Yeah, no, and with beer, it's especially important because I've obviously forgotten about them. So it's not like baking a cake that you remember. So that's a fantastic tip. And yeah, we're at time, but I'm sure that would be really useful. Hopefully, everyone's now rushing across and sort of adding photographs to their Instagram. A really interesting tip. But thanks so much for joining us today. Really, really appreciate it. I know it's fantastic to get to know you a little better. I'll put all of your details. Your LinkedIn and things on the Tivanka website into the notes. So if anyone wants to sort of see what you're up to or reach out, have a conversation, I'm sure they will. But thanks again and look forward to seeing you soon.
I'm here. Thank you, Chris.
So there you have it. That's season six in the can. Thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. I really, really do appreciate it. Thanks to JumpCloud for allowing me to continue to do this and speak to my MSP friends from around the world. So until season seven, take care and see you soon.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using JumpCloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.